Today is Friday, July 13, 2018, and this is the National Creditors Bar Association Creditors Rights In-Depth Podcast. Today our topic is unconscious bias, and we're joined by Tracy Spears, who's the founder of the Exceptional Leaders Lab. Tracy specializes in developing leaders, inspiring teamwork, and enhancing interoffice communications. Her innovative content and keynote speeches focus directly from her best-selling books, What Exceptional Leaders Know, and the Exceptional Leaders Playbook. Her energetic and interactive approach has helped leaders and aspiring leaders all over the world improve their leadership skills, their communication, and their understanding of how people and organizations succeed. Tracy is a graduate of the University of Oklahoma, is an accomplished athlete who was a member of the U.S. National Softball Team. She's also a member of the National Speakers Association and one of the highest-rated leadership, diversity and inclusion, and team development coaches in America. Good morning and welcome, Tracy.
Good morning, Mark. Thank you.
So our listeners, I think, today are going to be very excited about being able to hear some additional things on what might help them with their practices and their law firms and dealing and working with their workplace and employees. And as I was looking through one of the summaries on a topic that you had written on unconscious bias, you had indicated in the topic, you said, here's a summary. When employees view their workplaces as diverse and inclusive, the organization's profits exceed their non-diverse competitors. So I think if we can catch everybody's attention with talking about the bottom line, that might be a great way to start out. So,
right.
Let's talk about unconscious bias. So where does it come from?
Yeah, so I'm going to comment on what you said because I think that, you know, what we think is what's just the right thing to do to have, you know, a better diversity policy. But what you commented there in the opening is it's actually the profitable thing to do. So I'm glad that you started with that comment. So it comes from really, you know, a great place. It was a survival instinct. You think about, you know, how we make decisions on a day-to-day basis. Our brain is this amazing computer, as we all know, that takes in about 11 million bits of information, you know, in a moment. But we can only process or make sense of a few of those, like around 40 bits, I believe, is what the data says. So our brain is always saying, okay, I've got all of this information coming in, but I can only process a small bit of it. So the filter discounts anything that it's not been exposed to before. So said differently, your filter says, okay, well, if I've had some experience with something, that's going to make it through that filter and be part of the 40 bits. But if I haven't, or if I haven't had any exposure to something, I haven't been, you know, around, you know, that particular thing, whatever it is, it gets kind of left out, if you will. So that's really what happens. So the filter, the unconscious bias, is created by our past. I guess that's probably the easiest way to say that, right?
So it, you know, as I think we'll all find out in our discussions, or for anybody who's read into this, none of us are immune from this. And you know, I'm looking at another quote that you said: "You are biased, so am I, and it matters." You know, let's talk a little bit about the types of bias that are prevalent in a workplace. And when I looked at the five that you had listed out there, it's like, oh my God, I fall into some of these here, if not all of them, at some point in time. So maybe you could, you know, sort of describe for our listeners what are the most common prevalent ones that are seen in the workplace.
Sure. So the bias that, you know, when we talk about where it comes from, and it means that your, you know, your subconscious brain is making, you know, most of the decisions. So we do walk around in this state of being unconsciously biased because we have to so that we can function, right? We don't say, okay, now my right foot's going to go in front of my left foot, right? So it really does serve us. But where it affects us in the workplace, the five that you mentioned, the first one would be something called affinity bias. And this is kind of interesting. We all have all these biases, right? But this is where you really like people that are most like you, right? So this somebody that you, the word gives it away, right? That you have an affinity towards people that maybe have had your same experience. Maybe, you know, you'll see people that they'll go, oh, I'm from Oklahoma too. And you're like, you are, oh. So all of a sudden there's this connection there. There's, you know, this, it's easier to warm up to somebody when you have something in common with them. So that would be the affinity bias. The halo effect is the second one, and that is where when we really like somebody, we have a tendency to think that, you know, everything that they do is okay. So we, you know, the halo effect kind of, we benefit from that. Like we really like somebody at work, and we think, you know, they're a really great person, and so maybe we're not as objective in our decision making with them, or maybe we create more subjective, you know, environments. So the halo effect is a great thing when you really. I think everybody knows that when they like somebody, they are easier to forgive them, you know, for things.
Sure.
The next one is perception bias, and this is kind of the whole unconscious bias is just it's a social stereotype, and so our tendency to form those stereotypes about certain groups of people. We have these different perceptions. I'll give you a great example. We had, Wally was telling me, my business partner, Wally Schmader, that he has a Mexican-American neighbor, and his neighbor was out mowing the yard, and some guy literally pulls up in a car and jumps out and says, "Hey, what would you charge to mow my yard?" Right? He sees a Mexican-American thing.
Yep.
I know, it was awful. And the guy was great. He turns and he goes, "Listen, brother, I don't even have time to mow my own yard. I'm not going to mow yours, too." And the guy kind of sheepishly got back in his car. But that was his perception is he made this, terrible assumption. But we do it all the time. But that perception bias, that stereotype that we all do, you've probably had some of those, too, Mark, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you can think of one off the top of your head. I'll ask you in a little bit. I had one not too long ago. I was in Singapore trying to get back home, and there were 13 pilots that walked on the plane. And so we were all standing in line feeling super safe, these 13, they were all men, by the way, and they had on their, suits, and they get on the plane. And so we're all like, "Oh, awesome. Man, this must be a pilot's, convention or something." And so all of a sudden we find out when we get on the plane, they're all flight attendants. Right, so we, just assumed because they were men and the way they were dressed.
Yep.
Right? So we do that. So we have this, these stereotypes that we give. So we still felt safe, though, because they were good flight attendants.
That's good.
Right. So the next one is the one that really scares me, and that is confirmation bias.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the one that I think we could all give many examples about. And this is where people only look for information that will confirm a pre-existing belief. Right, so think about that. When you look at whether it's politically or it doesn't really have to even be that emotionally charged. When people start doing that the only information that they're taking in will support whatever point of view they already have, that's super scary. And I think that one happens oftentimes when you think of politically or.
Yeah.
There's just a lot of situations on that. Maybe you've had this experience
I was going to say, I even think in business a lot of times, and we approach this. I've been on the nonprofit management side my entire career, but when having worked with a number of small businesses over the years, I think what we often see sometimes, and we've been guilty of it too, throughout my career at times when we've looked to just find the data that's going to support sort of the direction or strategy without really getting as much objectivity and trying to step back away from it. So, you might be creating a business plan and you may be so passionate about it that you get thrown a piece of information that's different from that. It's like, well, no, how could that be true? You put blinders on to a lot of other things other than what I really want, to support the belief system that I have around it.
Right. Yeah, well, you'll see leaders that will only let people speak or they'll surround themselves with people that will only confirm, right, the agenda that they want. They're not pushing back at all. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've seen it. I'm sure you have too. Where really great people that have great ideas don't actually have any kind of a platform or a voice in an organization. They end up leaving, right, because they're not being valued. But more importantly, what happens to that leader is that they aren't seeing that situation from a well-rounded point of view.
Exactly. Exactly.
Super dangerous. So the last one is probably groupthink, and groupthink is just when, people are trying to fit in, right? People are, they don't want to push back. They know that if they raise their hand or maybe if they speak out of turn, it might go against the leadership. And groupthink, when a bunch of people just start, acquiescing to, okay, well, this is just the way it's going to be, you really do compromise the workplace, you compromise the outcome, you compromise everything in that sense. You need those people to be able to say, hey, wait a minute, this isn't the right direction, or hey, this is something we should consider. I am super sad to tell you I've done this. I've I was promoted in a position one time, and I remember the first 6 months getting on conference calls or going into meetings, and my sole goal was to not say anything stupid, right?
Mm-hmm. So, I understand.
That's a tough thing to do, but to have enough fortitude to, you know, state your opinion and do what you know is the right thing to do against whatever's going on, sometimes that's tough. So those are a few of them. They're, you know, I'm sure you can see most of those playing out most every day, right?
Absolutely. So, you know, if I'm a law firm owner right now and I'm listening to this and I'm hearing this and I'm saying, yeah, I can relate. I understand there's been some of those incidents and everything. But why does this even matter to me? I mean, how is this going to impact, you know, my day-to-day operations here? You know, what is there any value? What is the value of me even worrying about unconscious bias? I mean, I got all kinds of other things. I got payroll to meet. I got all those other things. How does this come into, you know, my realm of thought that I should be caring about this?
Gosh, good question. Yeah. You know, if you care at all about there's two answers to that. There's the very clinical answer, you know, and I could give you the stats of why it's profitable to, you know, worry about how you can be more diverse. I think the fundamental thing is that we are all, whether you're an attorney, it doesn't matter who you are, you're trying to create a non-hostile, nice place for people to come and work. And when you look at statistics about why people leave an organization, it's mind-boggling to me. It's something like 79% of the people leave because they don't feel appreciated. And, you know, when you start looking at big stats like that, high turnover, or mm-hmm. people that aren't, you know, feeling valued in the workplace, and I think that our climate is such that it used to be where people would, you know, just put up with it. People aren't putting up with it anymore. If they don't feel valued in the workplace, if they don't feel like they can contribute, if people are, you know, committing what we call these microaggressions, when, mm-hmm. you know, it's an unintentional discrimination, right? So the unconscious
right.
bias creates those microaggressions. And when people are, you know, unintentionally discriminating against a group of people, it's still the effect of that is that you will lose really good people in your organization. And when you start doing that and creating a reputation, especially as a law firm, of someone that's not, you know, diverse friendly or somebody that's not inclusive, it's also on the other side of that, it's going to start to, I think, diminish the bottom line. There are organizations, and I've had law firms bring me in just because they said, you know what, we need to check a box here. We have a super large client that's asking us if we have a diversity inclusion, you know, program, and we don't. So can you come in and just, you know, make sure we have one? And it's, you know, as somebody that does this for a living, I'm always like, okay, I'm going to do it because you're going to pay me well, right? I'm going to go in and check the box. But I know that the minute you get in there and you start talking about some of these things, people are changed. And people, you know, I don't think you can take it, you know, put the genie back in the box. I think once you start to hear, hey, just this simple unintentional comment has this effect on not only, you know, one of the people in your firm, but also all the people that connect to, like, there's just this awareness that we haven't had to be, you know, so dialed into in the past, that we really are, we do have to now because workers are demanding it. Like I said, the marketplace is demanding it. I don't know. Can you think of another reason that people would need to be dialed into it? You're listening.
Well,
to
you know, I think as I'm, you know, listening to the conversations, you know, and I even think of some of the hearings yesterday, and I won't even politicize it, but, you know, just the word bias has come out so many different times now, and, you know, whether it's the generational shifts, the Me Too movement, just bias in general that people, I think, I would agree with you, I think the sensitivity has been heightened so much globally that it's really hard not to at least do some own self-introspection and say, you know, so what's my role in this anymore? I think people just can't, you know, always check a box. It's become harder to just check a box. And I think both institutions who are failing to do anything about it, I think, are being held a lot more accountable by, you know, people in one way, shape, or form. So if I'm a firm and I'm looking to sort of either improve my strategy or in some cases start a strategy, you know, as you said, you've been called in where there may not have been strategy, what can a law firm do to potentially create a better diversity and inclusion strategy for themselves? Or, you know, if I'm a small firm owner, I'm saying, where do I begin? You know, Tracy, I don't even know where to start with this. What would be, you know, some of your recommendations in terms of that?
Yeah, I mean, this is a start if they would, you know, listen to the podcast, right? So there's just that creating some awareness around that will change behavior. And, you know, making a conscious effort to do some investigation around it, asking the people in the firm, you know, what's their experience around this. You know, what most firms have done is they've created a small committee of people that usually it's a group of diverse, you know, people that in the organization that have some passion, that have some, you know, have big opinions about it, you know, giving them a voice and asking them to make some recommendations around how we can be better. I'm going to say there's only been a couple of times I've gone in and there hasn't even been like any diversity at all, but for the most part, when you look around and you start saying, hey, we want to be more diverse and inclusive, you will find people that will raise their hand and say, hey, we're into that. We're interested in that. How, you know, what can we do? Let's just start some conversations. It can be as simple as changing, you know, how your web page looks. It's a bunch of little things. But I think making the decision to be more inclusive is the secret here. And, you know, when somebody makes that decision, it's not okay to just say, okay, well, now HR, you take this and run with it. The managing partner has to stay involved, at least connected to the outcome of that, because where it goes wrong is when someone goes, yeah, somebody needs to go do that, but yet they aren't walking that out in their everyday practice, right? They're not, you know, staying, you know, commenting on it, creating some, you know, awareness, putting some optics on the good things that we're doing. There's just too much upside to not do it. I do want to say, you know, oh, yeah, it's the right thing to do. Certainly it's a profitable thing to do, and certainly at the end of it, no one goes through all of that exercise and looks back and says, that was a waste of time. Like every law firm I've ever worked with, they get to the end of it and they go, oh, my gosh, we didn't know what we didn't know. We were unconscious in that. And so the upside in, you know, people being – you know, happier at work, people feeling more valued. Think about that person that all of a sudden feels important and feels like somebody cares about them. What kind of output do you get from that person? It's crazy the difference.
Yeah, significant. Well, that actually, you know, ties well to my next question, which is it really all comes back down to, you know, for leaders, you know, individually, what is it that I'm willing to do? What is it that, you know, that I'm going to undertake in my own square of the world here to work with mitigating my own unconscious bias? And what kind of recommendations do you have for us as individuals, you know, in terms of how we begin to approach that? You know, I think we all think about it at one point or another, or at least I hope we all do. But you know, what do you advise for individuals when they want to, you know, start dealing with some of their own unconscious biases?
You know, I remember when I first started doing this work, the answer to that question is to start being, you know, pay close attention to what your own biases are. The fact that they're unconscious biases, this is the hard part, because they're unconscious, right? We don't even know some of the things we're saying. I had a client that I was with not too long ago, and the client, you know, who is a very successful middle-aged white person says, you know, hey, I'm trying to decide between a Mercedes and an Audi, you know, white people problems. And I was like, I looked at her and I said, you know what you just said. I go, like you cannot say that. She's like, what do you mean? This is a super progressive, not racially biased in my experience with her in any way, but that was something she's heard since she was a kid. And so we had this big conversation about it. And she goes, oh, my gosh. She goes, I can't even believe I said that now. She said, do you know how many times I've said that and nobody said anything? But just having that awareness, or having people around you that are willing to say, hey, wait a minute, that's not okay. When you said that, this is what I heard. Or, you know, we're seeing a lot of corporate, you know, CEOs being called to the carpet for saying things that I know on some level you hear some of the people around them say, oh, they're not, you know, racially biased. They're just in that space of saying things they've always, you know, said.
Mm-hmm.
So being conscious of it, having people around you that are willing to say, hey, wait a minute, that's not okay, or that's offensive in some way. Google has this great strategy where they have people that, you know, it's their job to walk around and, you know, look at what they're seeing and see, is there anything that could be a microaggression or could be offensive to somebody, and feeding that back to leadership. So just that awareness is probably the big thing. Having some of those tough conversations, being willing to say, you know, gosh, where can I be better? Or, you know, just you listen differently. If you listen to this podcast, I don't know that you're going to not be able to hear that a little bit differently now after mm-hmm. we've given you a couple of these examples. So those would be a few things. And this, you know, just being the person that says, hey, I want to get better. I want us as a firm to, you know, to really embrace the D&I, not because it's just the right thing to do, but because it's, you know, gosh, we need to be paying more attention to the people that we care about. So those are a few things.
Excellent. Well, I was going to ask you, is there a one thought that you'd like our listeners to take away from our conversation here today?
Gosh, probably the one thought is just that this is not going away. This is something that needs to be the new normal for us as a society, right? It's not anything that we're trying to just check a box and move on. It really is the right thing to do, and it really is the profitable thing to do. It really is, I think, the new normal. And people that, you know, that haven't gotten on board, you know, they will one way or another. And I hope that this has inspired them to do so.
Excellent. Tracy, I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day this morning. If folks want more information, I know that they can go to the Exceptional Leaders Lab on the web and find some more information on unconscious bias, as well as some of the other great topics that you've put out there for becoming an exceptional leader. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, Tracy. Bye-bye.